morning, everybody. I had originally scheduled Mike Heiser shortly after my return to the air. And I promptly caught the devil's flu and turned Mike over to Ian Punnett, who is eminently more qualified than I am, certainly, to interview Mike Heiser on this subject. Mike Heiser is currently writing his Ph.D. dissertation entitled Divine Beings in Jewish Literature, written between the Old and New Testament periods. He is an expert on angels and divine beings in ancient Semitic texts. Besides his formal academic training, Mike has had a lifelong interest in the paranormal, particularly the UFO phenomena. He's uniquely qualified to write on the intersection of ufology with ancient texts and mainstream Western religions. And he's also going to do something tonight that you don't know anything about yet, but he's got a book coming on the Bible Code. That's been a subject of great interest to me for a long time. Coming up in a moment, Mike Heiser. And now, ladies and gentlemen, here is Mike Heiser. Mike, welcome to the program.
Art, thank you for having me on. What a thrill.
Well, it's a thrill to have you. I'm sorry I missed you the first time around, but the devil flu got me.
Mm-hmm.
I came back from a Super Bowl game that, by the way, could have been better. And after taking a flu shot, why, a long game of flu. And so you spent some time with Ian Punnett, and the show got rave reviews.
Well, it was a lot of fun.
What area did the two of you concentrate for the most part on?
Well, we pretty much discussed the book, The Facade.
Right.
We kind of danced around and touched on some of the things that are featured in the book. It's one of those things where it's sort of a true Art Bell novel. And by the way, I kind of purposed in my own heart that if I ever got on the Art Bell show with Art Bell, I would just tell you that that I just think your show is just wonderful. You don't know how many hundreds, literally hundreds of hours of grad school you got me through.
Thanks. Thanks.
And really, it really influenced my thinking in a lot of ways. So I just wanted you to know that.
Thank you. Why the name The Facade?
Well, the facade, of course, speaks of cover, artificiality, deception, and the initial thesis of the book, the initial question that the book seeks to answer is, what would the impact be if there was a genuine unveiling of intelligent extraterrestrial life? What would the impact be on, specifically, mainstream Western religious communities like Christianity and Judaism?
Yes. And what do you conclude?
Well, the character in the story is basically confronted with this. He has a religious studies background. And on the one hand, he sort of gets sucked into this maelstrom of events by a friend who was a former colleague, a former professor of his. And they spent a lot of time talking as Christians about this thing. And to both of those guys, it was just no problem. And so that's where it starts. And I take the opportunity in a novelized fashion to make it digestible rather than speaking academese.
Well, you're aware, of course, that there was the Brookings study.
Oh, yeah.
Which I'm sure you know
about.
We covered
the Brookings report in detail. You know, every time you mention the Brookings report on the show, I just cringe. Because I don't get mad at you. I get mad because you're right. That most people of faith, specifically Christianity and Judaism, would, I really do believe they would have a difficult time handling it. And since being on the show, I've run into people that, you know, think I'm starting a cult, just think I'm some kind of nut, because here I am. I'm a person who believes in God. I'm a person who believes in Christ, and I take my faith seriously. But yet I just love everything you talk about, and I've loved it for years. And I try to, through scholarly work, deal with these questions. And actually, the question of extraterrestrial life to Christianity is very old. It goes all the way back to Aquinas.
Mm-hmm.
And they were very willing to accept other worlds on different grounds and through different means of argumentation. It does not have to be something that is a terrible threat to Christianity or Judaism, but I agree with you that The Brookings Report, which has dominated, you know, the military-industrial thinking on this in relation to social, cultural, religious issues. You know, I cringe, but I've seen it. I have seen people that are there, and part of the facade is basically designed to convince people, look, it doesn't have to be this way. Theologically, you're shook up because you have misunderstood one key element of theology. But then the main character gets confronted with a whole set of other ancient texts that convince him gradually, move him away from...
Well, let me stop you already. What is it that has been misunderstood? One key element of theology that's been misunderstood, what is that?
All right. Your listeners can reference pretty much everything we'll talk about tonight on my website. And since we're talking about the extraterrestrial part of the facade, the address there is www.facadenovel.com.
And we've got that link.
Right. If they go up there, they should look for the link that says position papers. And when they go to that, they need, for this question that you just asked me, go to the file. I have a PDF file there entitled The Image of God. And that is the issue that's been understood. The reason Christians, in particular, have been shook up by this whole question of extraterrestrial reality is that they have mistakenly concluded that the image of God means intelligence or rationality or the ability to communicate on a higher brain activity level. That is a mistake. That is not what the text says. My position is articulated on the website, and I have a specific point of Hebrew grammar to defend this. The image of God is that which makes humankind unique. So if it's intelligence and we run into an intelligent extraterrestrial,
yes,
then wow, we're blown away.
Yes, we're not unique.
Yeah, we're not unique. It's a Galileo kind of event. And so that's why the church has been shook up by this. What the image of God actually is, it's not a thing that's put in us. The phrase should actually be translated. I didn't make this up. I mean, this is an old view that Semitic people have understood for years.
It's old and new. Did you know the Catholic Church has a number of observatories, space observatories?
Yeah,
they've run right over some environmental regulations to get one down in Arizona. I mean, they're very seriously interested in what is out there or what might be coming this way.
Yeah, and I actually referenced that in the facade as well, those observatories. But what it should say is that the text should be translated, let us create man as our image. And that means that let's make mankind, humankind, both men and women, to be our representatives.
Okay? As our image, you said?
Yeah, it's our image, and we'll get into whether it should be translated plural or singular now, which is one of Sitchin's biggest mistakes. And I have specific text, Hebrew text and Akkadian text that show that he is wrong here.
Well, if you say our, that sounds Sitchin-like.
Right, right. There are two plurals in the verse, let us make man in our image.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a nice segue, your comment, your catch there is a nice segue into the other centerpiece of the novel. And that is, and this is the part that bothers Christians about what I'm saying in the book and Jews because of monotheism. And what I'm going to say is not inconsistent with monotheism. Again, that's covered in the novel. Everything's covered in the novel. But the idea that in the Hebrew Bible, and this is across the board in ancient Near Eastern texts, divine beings are organized into a strict hierarchy that we call the Divine Council. Now, in terms of Israelite religion, we'll just take them. There's Yahweh, El, at the top. It goes by two different names. Below him, you actually have plural Elohim. Now, you may have heard of the term Elohim.
Yes.
It's usually a name for the name of God. But I have, again, on the website, and we can actually go through some of the things on the website if you want to during these 2 hours we'll devote to this. But Elohim in Psalm 82, verse 1, is used two times. The first time, it says, Elohim stands in the divine assembly. That's fine. Nothing normal there. The word stands there is a singular grammatically. The next phrase, though, is, in the midst of the Elohim, he passes judgment. So the second Elohim has to be plural.
Mm.
And the divine council setup that you see across the board in the ancient Near East is there's a high god at the top, El Elyon, the high god, most high. Then you get plural Elohim, gods, underneath him.
Sounds like my company.
I won't ask you where you fit in there.
Yeah, believe me, I'm barely an emissary.
Okay, well, we haven't gotten to you yet.
No.
Okay, well, In Hebrew Bible, in the Hebrew Bible religion, the high God creates the other Elohim, so he is qualitatively superior.
Mm-hmm.
He's the lone creator. He's the lone sovereign. He's the only one that's self-existent, pre-existent, the whole bit. Then you have the Elohim, the plural gods. We can talk about them. And below them, you have what we traditionally think of as angels. In Hebrew, it's malachim. So you have a strict hierarchy set up here. And, going back here, let us create our, command in our image, what God, and we know it's a singular God there, because there are five grammatical indicators, not just one. There are five grammatical indicators in Genesis 1, 26 and 27 that say that is a singular God. It's the name for the God, says to his counsel, hey, let's do this. I got a great idea. Let's make mankind, let's make him as our representatives on the earth, as I dictate to you and rule in heaven here, and you're my emissaries, and you have this job, and the angels below have their jobs, and you boss them around, and I boss you around. Let's do the same thing on earth. Let's create an individual, male and female, to run things on earth as if we were present. That's the whole point. You do not have gods creating mankind in Genesis 1. The only way you can do that is to ignore the grammar. And that is what Sitchin does in that case, in that text. And I don't want to, I have kind of a twofold goal tonight. On one hand, yes, I do want to talk about Sitchin, but I don't want people to get, the impression that I'm saying, everything Sitchin does is bad and everything Sitchin does is worthless.
Would you like to debate Zachariah?
Oh, absolutely.
Really?
Absolutely, sure.
I could arrange that.
Yeah, well, that would be fine. I have to be honest with you. I got to tell you, I'd rather it be after September 15th or 16th, because I'm supposed to be at the Bay Area UFO conference doing a presentation on Sitchin. And if we had it before then, I wouldn't have anything to talk about. I have to change my topic.
I see. No, all right, no problem. Do it at your convenience.
But that would be great. My credentials are on the website. I do translation work in 12 different languages. I know the languages. I know the text. I can, when it's appropriate, sit in judgment on somebody does, and I have very specific examples on the website.
All right, but bottom line, you're saying there is, at the top, a singular God.
In Israelite religion.
That always was.
Yes.
And that's an interesting concept all by itself. Always was.
Right. Now, think of it in these terms. Now, we've all heard stories, especially when you get into the Christian era, where Christians, of course, and Jews today both profess to be monotheists.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Isn't it odd, doesn't it strike you as odd, that when you get to the Christian era, the Christians, they developed out of Judaism, the Christians would accept the God of Israel as being the true God, but then they would worship Christ as God.
Yes.
Okay, so people are running around, in this era, they don't know what to think of the Christians yet. What are you guys? Are you, are you polytheists? Are you monotheists? They were willing, the Christians were willing to be put to death by the Romans. This is actually part of where my dissertation is.
Mm-hmm.
They were willing to be put to death to remain a monotheist, despite the fact mm-hmm. that they worshiped the God of Israel and Christ as God. To them, it was no contradiction. Okay, what we have done in Western religion is we have articulated a concept of monotheism that is not on Semitic terms. Okay, you have a high God. Of course, out of this comes binitarianism. You have, two beings at the same level, and that is in the Old Testament. It's very easy to show. I actually did this one time without knowing that I was teaching a group of Jewish people. We went through some angelic passages in the Old Testament, showing them binitarianism in the Old Testament. It kind of freaked them out. Took me by surprise, too, when I found out who they were.
What I've said about Brookings is that I think it's as true today as it was the day it was written. Now,
I'd have to agree, unfortunately.
Yeah, so apparently you do agree while you're cringing a little bit, but you're suggesting to yourself that it ought not be so.
Yeah, what I'm suggesting is it doesn't have to be. Now in the book, the character gets drawn to a more negative assessment of extraterrestrials through a whole set of other texts, but just in general, general principle, I could embrace very easily, in terms of my theology and in terms of my textual studies, an extraterrestrial reality if they were not evil, they were benign, and they were not connected to ancient texts that describe, like Genesis 6, the sons of God who came down and had sexual relations with human women. In the Book of Enoch, they're called watchers. If they're not those guys, wonderful. I think it would be cool.
I'm curious about something. Maybe you can help me out here. I did not hear the show you did with Ian because I was shivering, you know, in a rolled up ball. So I didn't hear that. But I have heard Ian speak very carefully about extraterrestrials in the past. And when people ask him about it, he's very tolerant of the discussion, engages the discussion full on. However, you can sort of tell that at the end of the day, he probably thinks that they are not extraterrestrials at all, but rather some sort of lower entity of the types that you were talking about a moment ago. That wouldn't be from another place at all, but...
Well, that's where I'm at. I think they're interdimensional or extra-dimensional, whichever term is best, beings that can come, you know, in our presence, interact
yes.
with us,
yes.
and when they do that,
but why,
they
why
are very
exclude,
physical.
Sure, but why exclude the possibility of real extraterrestrials? I mean, if you just simply go out and gaze at the night sky, those are all suns you see, those little dots,
mm-hmm.
More than you could possibly count with, we now know, the likelihood of planets revolving around them.
Mm-hmm.
So the probability of life is rather high mathematically, that is, that it's out there somewhere. Do you disagree with that?
No. I mean, I think it would be the neatest thing if, you know, one of them landed on the White House lawn and here we go. Or you know, we had a conference like Dr. Greer had yesterday and something really stupendous, you know, would have come out of that if, again, here's my caveat, and the two of these can coexist. I think you're on the right track. We could have these bad guys and we can actually have the good guys out there somewhere too. So I don't exclude that. I don't think it's a theological problem. But I can tell you from personal experience that there are many people of faith who just, because of bad theology, just, you know, really have a difficult time with this. And that was part of my motivation with the facade, to try to put this out here and try to reduce scholarship to very readable or just a great story, but get it into their heads that, hey, you know, take a look at this. This is not something that should just make you go nuts.
Well, since you were researching this so painstakingly and actually doing translations, what made you decide to present this in a novel form?
Basically, it was the package. It was a delivery system that I thought, you know, if I could write a book like this and it would get too technical, so I had to come up, you know, and just too dry, you know.
Sure.
You know, that sort of thing. So I thought, hey, I'll distill it to the point where people can still get it. And I just, you know, I know I can write a great story with this, and I know it's going to come. My first bad review is going to come someday, but I haven't gotten it yet. So the story works. And then I thought, hey, anything more technical I can put on a website, I can follow it up, you know, do something like that. Or I've published some articles already, at least one of them I've gotten permission to post on the website about the Divine Council. But I could do that, but for the populace, the most people, I wanted to have a good delivery system.
All right. Mike, hold on. We're at the bottom of the hour right now. And so, really, if you read carefully, you can have it both ways. Now, that is not going to convince a lot of fundamentalists out there, and I think Mike knows that, and I know that. Which means that were they to land in a very apparent, immediate way, we'd have a big problem. I've said the little green guy coming down the ramp would be full of so much lead before he got to the bottom of the ramp that you get the idea.